Abby, thank you very much for the forecast update. It is 25 minutes in front of 6 o'clock. Sports Beat continues on this Monday evening. My name is Darren Pritchett. Voice is still struggling, trying to get over this cold. And when you're a fan of a team that's in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup playoffs, even at home, you get a little excited at times. You hoot and holler. So I did my voice no favor watching my Bruins take out the Leafs in overtime in Game 7 Saturday night, 2-1. But you know what? I can be topped because my next guest, Ty LaHorka, the Notre Dame football beat reporter at Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com, did something that I have never had the chance to do, probably will never have the chance. So I think it's pretty cool. He's a Dallas Star fan, went back home to Texas, and took in Game 7 of Dallas-Vegas in person and got to watch the Stars pull out a Game 7 win over the Golden Knights. So at home, it's nerve-wracking, and you're at the edge of your seat. What's it like being a fan of your team in the home building watching a tight and hotly contested Game 7 take place?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything, honestly. You feel those same nerves that you feel when you're sitting on the couch. But honestly, when you're sitting on the couch watching a game like that from home, you feel a little helpless. But when I was in the arena and you've got 18,000 people waving their rally towels and everyone's screaming Go Stars and everyone's on the same page, those are the moments that kind of help you settle in and say, okay, maybe I will get through this. But I will tell you, when Vegas tied it up 1-1 and that thing was going to the – and you knew basically one period was going to decide the hockey game, or, you know, the extra periods, which are even worse on your mentals and whatnot, it was a little rough right then. That was probably the toughest intermission that I've ever been through as a hockey fan, and I've been through quite a few of them, been to a ton of hockey games in my life. But that intermission, I was like, this is going to go one way or the other. Please let it go our way. And it did, because Radek Fokus scored in the first minute of that third period, and the Stars do what they do to earn the number one seed in the Western Conference and shut that game down. And it was a really fun third period to watch, because I think everyone in that building kind of gained confidence, even though Jack Eichel and the guys had a few things to say late and had an opportunity to tie that game a couple of times. It's nice to have Jake Ottinger back there. You know very well, having Jeremy Swayman on your team. So it was a fun night of hockey, a fun weekend of hockey, like you said, starting with Boston and Toronto on Saturday night.
I understand some people don't get into hockey because it is tough to watch on TV. It's tough to sometimes see the puck. So I get that, but I always encourage people, if you just want to be just kind of a semi-fan, you don't even have to watch the regular season. Watch the playoffs, and I will guarantee you, you will find out, and I'm a huge football, basketball, baseball fan, but for my money, there is nothing like the Stanley Cup playoffs. The excitement, the anticipation, the drama, it's just different. I don't think I can explain why, but the tension just always ramps up. Maybe because there aren't many goals or points scored like in the NBA or college basketball, but the Stanley Cup playoffs just brings out so much drama for the fans.
Yeah, and every little moment matters. Like I was saying, that first goal in the third period from Fox, that's a fourth liner doing that, and you don't really ever see maybe sometimes in the NBA you'll have a game where a role player comes off the bench and you least expect it, but I'd say the game-winning goal in a Game 7 in a 2-1 game is the equivalent of somebody coming off the bench and dropping 30.
Yeah.
And that is just so highly unlikely, and that's what happened last night. And it's a moment, like I said, the entire fan base will have forever. The Pastrnak goal in overtime against Toronto is a moment that fans will have forever. So when you're talking about fans that don't really get into hockey, and it's funny, my stepdad, actually, not a huge hockey fan, he tells me all the time, I don't know the rules, it's tough for me to watch. But as this series went on, I could tell by the way that he was texting me, he was getting more and more into it. He was locked in last night. So it's one of those things that I absolutely agree with you. If you're ever going to watch a hockey game, it would be this time of year, April, May, June, because that's when it's at its finest.
I got to be honest, Tyler, I'm not sure I'll remember Pastrnak's overtime goal against Toronto. We have beaten Toronto so many times with so many goals, they just kind of all blend together, you know?
Yeah, that's a good problem to have. That's a good thing.
Yeah, easy to say now. Wasn't fun a couple of nights ago.
Absolutely. absolutely.
What a day for Nielle Ivey. She almost put together a natural hat trick today as she put together, I don't know if these are elite bench players, if one of them is going to start, but Tyler, we have to get your thoughts as someone that covers the Irish women's basketball team. They pick up two all-conference performers today, Liz Carlin from Marquette and also Liotta King from Pittsburgh. So first question is, do you think either one of these players moves into the starting lineup, or has Notre Dame just created one of the best benches in the country?
Yeah, it's either or, and I think, what are we, 5-6 months out from this season starting, it's kind of up in the air right now, and I think Nielle is going to be very happy to get these players on campus over the summer, including Kate Koval, because that's the caveat in all this, is Kate Koval is coming in, she's a five-star freshman center, 6'5", has all the tools, looks like a player that can start right away, start for her whole career, but then when you add in 85 starts of experience from Liza Carlin, and I believe Liotta King started 70 games at Pitt, got over 150 starts right there that you're choosing from, and Koval doesn't have any. So if you want to ease her into it and have the five-star come off the bench, I guarantee you she'd be more than willing to do that, because you're talking about a player, like I said, with these players gone next year, they both only have 1 year of eligibility remaining. Koval's going to start for the rest of her career. So if that's a sacrifice she's willing to make, and as an 18-year-old, you generally are, you know, you're going to listen to your head coach and say, yeah, I trust you. Let's do this. Let's go win a national championship, because that's what Nielle Ivey has created, is a national championship roster. King was the most improved player in a very good conference in the ACC. Like you said, all ACC first team, Mark, and then Carlin at Marquette, all Big East first team. These were two of the best players in the transfer portal in this cycle, and Nielle Ivey got both of them. And kind of like what I wrote today, it's not like you only had to get one of them. And I think people are saying, well, what are you going to do with both of them now? If you have a chance to get both of them, you take both of them every single time. So Notre Dame got much better in the last 24 hours. And, you know, we were talking a couple weeks ago, Darren, that this is what Notre Dame needed, was a couple forwards, a couple front court players to bolster what Maddie Westfeld and Kate Koval are going to do. And now you've got just loads of depth there. We all know that the guards are really good as well. And it's funny, I think it was the night of the Final Four, when I think Iowa was playing UConn and South Carolina, LSU, was that a rematch? Maybe I forget the teams in the Final Four, but I said, let's pick our Final Four for next year. I had Notre Dame in the Final Four then, and that was before we knew that they were going to get these players. I am much more confident about that pick. But this is a team that can absolutely make it to the Final Four next year.
Let me ask you about King, the Pittsburgh forward, who was a double-double machine, 18 last year, including two against Nielle Ivey and the Fighting Irish. What will her skill set bring to the Notre Dame program?
Yeah, it's a really unique one, because she rebounds like crazy. Like you said, she's a double-double machine. She was up there with Elizabeth Kitley for the most double-doubles in the ACC, but she's only 6 foot. So it's a craftiness that she brings, a physicality. I think it's a really high basketball IQ that allows her to get to the places that she needs to be. You saw a little bit of problems with Notre Dame in that they didn't really get to where they need to be, or they didn't have the players that knew how to get there or had the tools. She's just crafty, man, and she'll get to those spots. And it's a lot of offensive rebounds. I think a telling stat, she had 108 offensive rebounds last year for Pitt. Notre Dame was led by Maddie Westfeld in that stat with 76. And by the way, Liza Carlin had 77. So both of these players that are coming in would have led Notre Dame in offensive rebounds last year. And that's just so many more possessions that are going to be afforded to an already really potent Fighting Irish offense. So when it comes to King, I look at the offensive glass, and then she's crafty when it comes to scoring too. I mean, 18 points per game is nothing to scoff at. That's a lot of points. A couple of years ago, that would have, you know, before Hannah Hidalgo came to this program, that would have been tops on Notre Dame a couple years ago. So player that can do it all, and this is a player that did it in the ACC, like I said. So they're playing all this opponents and teams that Notre Dame was playing, and she fared, you know, up there with the best of them. So just a very good player on both sides of the ball, and especially when it comes to rebounding.
And Tyler, Carlin from Marquette brings very similar point and rebound numbers, but she adds a little more versatility with a perimeter game, correct?
Yeah, so that's another funny stat about King. 107 appearances, I believe it is, over 100 games played at Pitt, never taken a three-point shot. Liza Carlin, on the other hand, took 70 this past year, and I believe she made about 35% of them. So that's a really good clip for a 6'2 player, and she's going to stretch the floor a little bit. I would probably say her game is a little bit more resemblant of Maddie Westfeld's in that way. So you've got a couple players. It's pick your poison. If that's what the rotation is going to be, you're not missing much when either of those players are subbed out. They can play on the floor at the same time if need be as well. Yeah, definitely a little bit of a stretch the floor element with Carlin. She can definitely make some jumpers and stretch it all the way out to the three-point line.
Some non-conference teams might be asking out of their contract at this point.
Absolutely.
Tyler Horka joining me, the Notre Dame football beat reporter at Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. I started the show with some women's basketball talk. Then I went into a little Notre Dame football, and I don't know if you've seen this or not, but Pro Football Focus came out with their 2025 NFL Draft Big Board. And I think we all know, based on recruiting and development, Notre Dame's going to have a lot of players on these lists in the coming years. And I wasn't surprised. There were four Notre Dame players on the list. Three of the four I guessed right away. And that's Benjamin Morrison, who is eighth, Howard Cross, 37th, Xavier Watts, 41st. Now, I don't know if you've seen the list or not, but if you have not seen the list, what would be your guess as the fourth player?
I have not seen the list, but with the way that you're setting me up for this, I'm going to take a stab at Riley Leonard, perhaps.
How about Mitchell Evans at number 33 in the country? What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I've been seeing this a little bit. I haven't seen this particular list, but I think PFF, right after the season ended, did a top returning tight ends for the 2024 college football season, and they might have had Mitchell Evans number one. Mm. And what I'll say is I kind of buy it, because the eight games that we did see of Mitchell Evans last year, he was on his way to Michael Mayer status as a pass catcher. Now, obviously, there's so much more that goes into playing the tight end position. You got to be able to block, and that's both run blocking and sometimes pass blocking too. They don't always ask you to run routes as a tight end. So a little bit surprised, yes, but the potential is through the roof. I mean, this is a guy that's probably only just scratching that, I would say, because Michael Mayer was at Notre Dame for so long, and he was an early second-round draft pick and probably should have been a first-round draft pick if more tight ends would have went earlier in that draft. He sat behind him for a couple years. So last year was the first we really saw of Mitch Evans' true potential. And like I said, he was just scratching that. And, I mean, the numbers were if he would have played four more games, five more games, including the Sun Bowl, he would have had a Michael Mayer-like season. So I'm not totally surprised, but there is that element of he still has so much more to prove, and to put him that high on the list is pretty surprising for sure.
With Evans and Kevin Bauman missing spring practice, do you believe the Irish coaching staff saw what they needed to see out of the rest of the group, and did somebody take advantage of those injuries more than anybody else?
Yeah, I think they did. And Eli Raridan is still coming along. I mean, two ACLs in 2 years is just so hard to come back from. I think he looked as healthy as he ever has in a Notre Dame uniform in this spring. So I'd say he definitely took advantage and is probably the number one. But the guy nipping at his heels is definitely Cooper Flanagan. And we saw some of what he can do. I think he ran a really good route, caught that touchdown from Steve Angeli against Pittsburgh last year, I believe it was. And this spring, he kind of took off as a pass catcher. And like I said, there's still so much more that goes into the tight end position. And I think that's what he has to get drilled down. And Mike Denbrock told us that as well. You know, there's just so much stuff that a sophomore has to do. Not everyone's going to come in and be Michael Mayer and do it from the start. I think that's where Cooper Flanagan is at. But if anyone did take the most advantage, it's him. Because this is a guy that's being elevated without Bauman and without Evans to number two. I mean, he's Notre Dame's number two tight end. And like I said, has a chance to contend with Eli Raridan for that number one spot. So I'll also give a shout out to Jack Larson coming in as an early enrollee freshman. Your head is spinning. You saw it in the spring game there that he can even go out and run routes and make plays. So at full health, this group is really good. They just need to get those other two guys back.
I mentioned that there were three defenders on this list. And again, no surprise, Benjamin Morrison, Howard Cross, and Xavier Watts. Now, if we got a bunch of Irish fans together, I think the first thing they would say about the offense is, tell me how good the tackles are going to be, and if those are going to be fine, the offense is going to be great. On the defensive side, Tyler, we see so much talent, experience, third year in the defensive coordinator system. That's very, very important. Is there a weak link on defense that we see, or is it basically the weak link, or we just don't know about some of the depth yet because we have not seen them in a bigger role? How do you analyze, is there a weak link on the defense?
Yeah, you set that up perfectly, because I don't think there is a weak link when it's at full health, because you got the cornerback in Benjamin Morrison. You got the safety in Xavier Watts. Christian Gray is obviously really good. The linebackers I was so impressed with, like Kingston Viliamu-Asa is going to be a dude. He came in and he grasped everything, and he already has the physical tools as well. You've mentioned the defensive linemen. Notre Dame is set there, almost returned every single defensive lineman. And the one that they had to replace, they went out and got an experienced grad transfer from Duke and RJ Open. So there's no weak links. But the question, or the external weak link, is depth. Do they have the guys to replace those guys when they go down? Benjamin Morrison, we're not sure if he's going to start at Texas A&M on August 31st. Shoulder surgery in, I believe it was March, or it might have even been April. And it was during the spring. That's a lot to come back from. Is Mickey and Gray enough? Because Morrison and Gray definitely is in my mind. But as soon as you start dropping pieces, do you have the pieces to replace those guys? That's the question on that side of the ball. And when they are all healthy, they've shown that they can stay on the field for lots of snaps, lots of snaps, lots of snaps. Xavier Watts was on the field all the time. We saw the two linebackers that just got taken in the NFL draft on the field all the time. Jack Kaiser is going to kind of slide into one of those roles. And like I said, the other guys are just brimming with talent and upside. So no weak links, but man, you better hope a lot of these guys stay healthy, because beyond that, there are some question marks.
I'm assuming you're kind of a Dallas Cowboys news junkie, kind of like there are Irish junkies across the country that read your stuff. I'm sure you read a lot of Cowboys stuff, and you're back in Texas right now. I know we talked about this last week, but I'm just curious, from a media standpoint or a fan standpoint or family members talking, what has been the reaction to Maris Leofau from Notre Dame going in the third round to the Cowboys?
I think the Notre Dame element has been the biggest takeaway from it. And you go back to what Jerry Jones said in the phone call that the Cowboys put on social media, the phone call, the draft call with Maris Leofau. And it was, hey, we're bringing some of that Notre Dame blue and gold, and it's going to mesh well with our blue down here. And it's worked for this franchise before. I mean, look at Zach Martin. He's been one of the best guards in football for a long time for the Dallas Cowboys. And it's a totally different position, and it's even the other side of the ball. But I think that there's a little bit of a connection there. And I think everyone that I've talked to, and like you said, what I've read, is, hey, we just got a linebacker from Notre Dame who basically started every single game for the last 2 years. And Al Golden was the defensive coordinator there, and he trusted this guy to run that system, which is a little bit more complicated than some of the other college football defenses that you'll see. And he did it really well. And he's getting better from that foot injury too. And I think that's a big thing, is like, hey, maybe this guy's best football is still ahead of him. And you didn't see it at Notre Dame because he was hampered by that injury. So yeah, it's optimism that's kind of surrounding that pick. And at first, maybe it didn't make a lot of sense, because you thought maybe J.D. Bertrand would be the first Notre Dame linebacker taken in that draft. But I think everybody that covers the Cowboys, follows the Cowboys, they really like that pick.
I think ESPN's NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky created a new storyline about this Al Golden NFL-style defense that is helping these guys get drafted maybe a little sooner than expected.
Yeah, absolutely. And at first I don't know if I would say I was skeptical of that narrative, just because it's like, okay, I get it. He coached in the NFL for a while, a couple different teams. You know, maybe he does bring that knowledge over, but at the end of the day, you still have to formulate a college defense and install it and have these guys run it. And, you know, sometimes you're tailoring that to your opponents, and college offenses are a little bit different than NFL offenses. But the longer that Al Golden stays, let's just put it this way, I'm buying into that narrative more and more, because, it does seem a little different the way he does it. And if you would have asked me that if Notre Dame would have had a top five defense in college football last year, and I knew that the players were talented and whatnot, I would have said, nah, it's just too hard to do. Like, Michigan was a top five defense. Georgia was a top five defense. Those are the blue bloods in college football right now. And Notre Dame lost three games and was still in there with them. So I think that speaks very highly to what Al Golden is doing. And if Mike Denbrock can figure out the other side of the ball, we are looking at a playoff, maybe even a national championship contending type of team.
Well said. What's happening at blueandgold.com right now?
A bunch of women's basketball content, as you can imagine. I'm going to try to get up with the two commits and even maybe the coach of the – I don't know if you saw, Darren, it might have been right when you were going on or maybe just before, but Notre Dame also got a class of 2025 five-star commit. So the rich get richer on the women's basketball front, and I'm covering that. A little bit slower on the football side, but a lot of recruiting going on from Mike Singer and Kyle Kelly. So, as always, we got you all covered, and a lot of lacrosse coming up in the next month as well, because I think Notre Dame's got a serious shot to go back-to-back after winning the first national championship in program history last year. So, fun times. Football season is rapidly approaching, but we got a lot of other stuff covered at blueandgold.com as well.
All right, very good. Make some birdies down there for me, and we will talk to you again next week.
All right, go Stars and go Bruins, huh?
Hey, I'm with you there. We'll just support each other. Appreciate it, Tyler. Right. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, talk to you next week. Thank you.
You bet. That's Tyler Horka, the Notre Dame football beat reporter at Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com, and, of course, covers Notre Dame women's basketball as well. Appreciate his conversation. We've reached the 5:56 mark here in the 5 o'clock hour. Time is flying by. We've got our Twitter question of the day coming up, top five stories of the weekend and more, all coming up as Sports Beat continues on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960, WSBT South Bend.
Whether you're building new-